again. A realization hit her like a slap on the face. The voice in her head. It was Kai's. "You saved me, Kai," she said.
"Ding."
She felt around her. The underwater cavern was small, narrow enough so she could reach both sides with outstretched arms, not even high enough for her to stand up in. Kai must have found this underwater pocket of air when he dived earlier. He had jumped into the water to push her down to the safety of the underwater cave. He had said his first word, and it was her name. Sitting in the damp darkness, everything became clear to her, like a spider's web hung with dew in the morning sun. It wasn't Kai's fault that she hadn't heard his voice. It was her fault. She had never spoken to him with her mind before. All these months she'd been chatting and chiding with her mouth. She hadn't once thought of speaking to him with her mind. Not until she thought she was drowning when she couldn't open her mouth because she was surrounded by water. Not until she was forced to had she spoken to him with her mind, as she'd done with Dancer. She had somehow been expecting Kai to start the communication, not realizing that she needed to teach him. How stupid she'd been. Babies didn't wake up one day and know how to speak. Their mothers talked to them every day, teaching them language slowly, word by word. Ping was ashamed of herself. Her concern had been all for herself. Her loneliness. The weight of her responsibilities. The sacrifices she'd made to care for the dragon. It wasn't until she thought she was dying and leaving the little dragon alone in the world that she had cared enough to speak to Kai with her heart. She had always thought of her relationship with the baby dragon as a one-way thing. She'd had to do all the work with no reward. Kai didn't teach her the way Dancer had. She'd been too slow-witted to realize the truth. She was the most important thing in the world for Kai. And equally, he was the most important thing in the world for her. He was her reason for living, her life's work. If he died, she would have no reason to go on. Why had she never realized this before? Caring for him wasn't a burden, it was a pleasure, a privilege. And it certainly wasn't a one-way relationship. Kai was very young, but he had already saved her life. He had rescued her from the necromancer. The little dragon nipped her fingers. Even though it was pitch dark, she closed her eyes. It helped her concentrate. The necromancer would assume she had drowned. He would search the shepherd's hut for Kai, but when he didn't find him, he would leave. "We'll wait," she told Kai without opening her mouth. "We'll wait here until he's gone."
"Ping,"
the little dragon said, and he curled up on the ledge beside her, with his head in her lap. In the damp darkness, it was impossible to measure time. Ping couldn't tell whether minutes or hours had passed, but she felt stronger. She closed her ears and eyes and turned off her bodily senses one by one until her second sight was the only thing that linked her to the world. There was no hard mass in her stomach. The necromancer had gone. She was sure of it. "Come on, Kai," she said, sounding the words in her head. "We're going back up, but I can't do it without you. You'll have to lead the way." Ping couldn't see Kai, but she heard him plop into the water. It was as if she'd been previously speaking to him in a barbarian language and had only just started speaking his native tongue. She lowered herself in the water. She felt Kai place his tail in the palm of her hand. She held on to it and took a deep breath. "Swim, Kai," she said, though she didn't say the words aloud.
"Ping," said the voice in her head.
She felt the water around her move. She kept her eyes closed, concentrating on not breathing, on kicking as hard as she could. The journey up through the well seemed long, much longer than the journey down. Her lungs felt like they would burst. She opened her eyes. The water still stretched above her, but it had changed from black to dark green. Kai was moving through the water as sleek as a fish. Finally, Ping broke through the surface, gasping in the sunlit air that filled her hungry lungs, but blinded her eyes. She pulled herself out of the well, still breathing hard. She leapt to her feet, bracing herself for an attack, summoning her chi power. Her eyes grew accustomed to the light. It was late afternoon, and there was no sign of the necromancer, no trace of his contaminating presence. Kai climbed out of the well and shook himself like a wet dog. Hua appeared, with drops of blood around his mouth. Ping picked up Hua and went straight to the hut. The necromancer had been inside. The sheepskins were thrown on the floor, the food chest upended. But the mess looked like frustrated anger, rather than a proper search. Still, Ping had to be very careful. The necromancer was a shape-changer. But she had one advantage over him, her second sight. She would have to pay much more attention to it. Ping shivered. "It will soon be dark enough to light a fire and have some supper," she said. Kai made a tinkling flute sound. As Ping sat by the fire and ate a hot meal, she was grateful for these simple comforts. She would never take her good fortune for granted again. There was one thing she had to do, though, before winter set in. Kai needed a daily supply of milk. She had to find another goat. She decided to go down the mountain to the nearest village the next day and buy one. She resolved to start collecting nuts and berries for her winter store. She would practice her chi exercises every day without fail. She now spoke to Kai in her mind, but when it was bedtime, she told him stories. She repeated important words aloud so that he would gradually come to understand spoken words better. It would be important for him to be able to know what people were saying when they were out in the world. He liked her simple stories about shepherds tending sheep, about a clever rat, and about a slave girl who lived on a lonely mountain. When Kai was asleep, Ping sat by the fire and thought of ways she could repay the shepherd for the use of his hut. She would carve a bowl for him. She would mend his summer trousers and tunic, which were full of holes. She would wash his sheepskin rugs that smelt like they were still attached to sheep. When they left in spring, she would leave the little hut spotless. She got up at dawn, ready to make the journey down the mountain. Before she set out, she did her chi exercises on the grassy slope outside the hut, breathing in the chi from the rising sun, feeling it warm her skin. Kai kept interrupting her.
"Ping! Ping!"
He was excited about the trip down the mountainside. "Shh, Kai," she said. "We'll be leaving soon." Ping closed her eyes so that she could concentrate and block out any other interruptions.
"Ping! Ping! Ping!"
"Kai, I told you to wait." Ping opened her eyes. The golden sunlight was reflecting on metal. There were swords and spears, many of them. There were also red leather caps and vests and wooden shields. It took her mind a few moments to make sense of these unfamiliar things. It was a section of Imperial Guards, 10 of them. They had crept up the hillside without making a sound. Kai had taken the shape of a rock. The guards formed a ring around her, their spears all pointed in her direction. Ping couldn't understand why her second sight hadn't warned her. It is a serious crime to trespass on the sacred slopes of Tai Shan, the captain said. One of the soldiers peered at Ping.
I know who this is, he said. It's the sorceress from Huangling.
The one who escaped with the Imperial Dragon? The captain asked. The guard nodded and looked around nervously, as if he expected a dragon to jump out and attack them. The captain stood up straight. In the name of the Great Emperor, Son of Heaven, Commander of the Armies, wisest among us, I arrest you for the crimes of deserting an Imperial post, stealing the last Imperial Dragon, and trespassing on the sacred slopes of Tai Shan, he said. Before the 8 Immortals, between the 5 Sacred Mountains, under the sun and moon, I arrest you and take you to bow down before your Emperor and confess your crimes. A blur of blue fur attached itself to the nearest man. The guard yelped as Hua bit his arm and blood poured from it. Another guard lunged at Hua, hitting him with the hilt of his sword. Hua let go of the guard's arm and slumped to the ground.
No, Ping shouted, don't kill him. He's a special rat, a sorceress's rat. The Emperor will want to examine him.
Ping looked around anxiously for Kai. The rock had disappeared. All she could see was a spade leaning against the hut wall. Her mind wasn't working as fast as it should be. She thought the spade was around the other side of the hut. She heard a short, sharp flute note over and over again. It was Kai. He was afraid.
Ping, said a frightened voice in her head.
The spade turned into a soup ladle. The guards were all staring at Ping, so they didn't see the shape change. Two of them moved towards her. She thrust out her arm, sending out a bolt of chi power. The invisible force knocked the nearest guard off his feet. The guards raised their shields. Ping sent out another chi bolt, but the soldiers' shields deflected it. Two guards grabbed Ping by the arms. They brought Ping's belongings outside and studied them. The captain looked at the two identical soup ladles with a puzzled frown. He reached out to pick one up. Ping held her breath and waited for a small dragon to appear. The air around the ladle shifted slightly as the captain tried to grasp it. His hand turned rigid. The color drained from his face. His eyes glazed over. He opened his mouth to say something. The words remained unspoken. He fell to the ground with a heavy thud and lay as stiff as a spear. The guards stared at their leader's inert body, unsure what to do. One of them bent close to his chest. "He's still breathing," he said. The guards all turned fearfully to Ping. She felt 9 spears digging into her through her gown. She could hear an anxious ping, ping, ping in her head. There were so many iron weapons. Though they weren't close to Kai, they were still causing him pain.
Don't try any more sorcery or we'll stick you, one of the guards said.
He waved his spear towards her things.
Pick 'em up.
Ping collected up her cooking bowls and the other ladle and put them in her bag. She turned her back on the guards as she picked up the ladle that was Kai, shielding him from the iron. As she reached out to the ladle,
Her hands grasped a dragon shape. The sensation of seeing one thing and feeling something completely different made her feel dizzy. Specks of light drifted in front of her eyes, and there was a ringing in her ears. She glanced at the unconscious captain. It obviously had a more drastic effect on other people. Kai wrapped his tail around her arm. To the guards, it looked as if she had a ladle hooked over her arm. Good boy, Kai. Some of the guards searched the hut.
There's no dragon in there, one of them said.
Ping felt the spears jab into her.
Let's go then.
She slung the bag over her shoulder. The guards pushed her forward with the points of their spears. As they marched her down the sloping meadow, Ping turned to look at the shepherd's hut. It looked so comfortable and welcoming, her heart ached to be leaving it. All her peace and safety had evaporated like mist in the morning sun. Chapter 9. A Rough Journey. The wagon slowed. The leather cover was laced shut, so Ping couldn't see what was happening. She could hear the low mumble of the guard's conversation. It must be evening, she thought to herself. We're stopping for the night at a village. That's what had happened on the three previous nights. She imagined the scene outside the wagon. The entire village would be gathered to catch a glimpse of the prisoner who was being escorted by the Imperial guards. A disappointed mumble would pass through the crowd when they saw that it was only a young girl. One of the guards would whisper to someone. Sorceress, it would say, and the word would hiss through the crowd like water spilt on a hot stove. The Imperial guards had marched Ping to the foot of Tai Shan, where a two-wheeled wagon was waiting, harnessed to a patient ox. It was made for transporting sacks of grain and vegetables, not people, and didn't look sturdy enough to withstand bumping along a rocky mountain path. The guards had bound her hands and feet and pushed her into the wagon. The roof of the wagon was so low that Ping couldn't sit up straight beneath it. At least they hadn't discovered Kai. Ping heard long, low notes. She looked down at the baby dragon in her lap. Ping. Ping. Ping, Kai said. It was like an accusation. Why had they left their pleasant mountain home? Why had she allowed them to be captured? What were those horrible metal things that made him feel bad? There was nothing she could say to reassure him. With her hands tied, she couldn't even stroke him. She didn't complain when he nipped her fingers. The guards hadn't been searching for Ping. That was why her second sight hadn't told her they were near. They'd meant her no harm. She didn't know why they'd been wandering around Tai Shan. They'd all heard about the dragon sorceress, but once she was tied up they weren't so afraid of her. Hua was another matter. She'd heard them muttering about the unusual colouring of his fur in the sunlight, his exceptional size, and the fireballs he spat out. They would have put an end to this unnatural creature with a spear, but knew that Ping was right. The Emperor would want him brought back alive. They had tied the rat up so that he couldn't escape, muzzled him with a leather thong so that he couldn't launch any spitballs. After what had happened to their captain, they were all wary of the soup ladle, and no one dared take it from her. Kai had been terrified, and she had comforted him as best she could with her hands tied. She knew her reassurances that everything would be all right were not very convincing. One thing she had been able to do, as they bumped along in the wagon, was tell him stories. She always spoke to him with her mind, not her mouth, but his vocabulary still hadn't increased. The only word he said was ping. The little dragon whimpered. At least they haven't found you, she said. It wasn't much consolation. Ping didn't have to tell Kai to shape change whenever the guards threw back the leather cover. It was his natural instinct when he was in danger. She'd been able to carry the ladle-shaped Kai with her whenever she was allowed out of the wagon. These times were few and far between. The guards had kept her shut inside the covered wagon day and night, allowing her only a few minutes each day to get out and stretch her legs. They fed her reasonably well, but stood with spears digging into her as she ate. She heard them grumbling about their ration of gruel. Ping's meals on Taishan had been small and simple, and the goat meat gruel was a welcome change from fish. But Kai couldn't eat it. She'd hoped that Hua would be able to help her, but he was trussed up like a chicken ready for roasting and couldn't escape. Ping knew Yu Chu would be furious. He had given her the position of Imperial Dragon Keeper. It was a great honor, and she had rejected it. He had treated her as a friend, confided in her. He had allowed her to call him by his personal name. No one else had that privilege but his closest family members. In return, she had helped the last Imperial Dragon to escape. That was a crime punishable by death. She had managed to collect a few worms and a snail or two in the brief times that she was allowed out. Kai had found some grubs in the rotten vegetables still in the bottom of the wagon. Ping had fished weevils out of her gruel for him, but he was still very hungry. And every time the guards came near, their iron blades made him weak and sick. Ping tried to think, though her mind was as weary as her body. The emperor would be in Chang'an at this time of year. It would take the Yoks weeks to plod all the way to the capital city. Even if they travelled by river, it would be a slow journey, as oarsmen would have to row against the strong current. She had to come up with a plan of escape quickly, or Kai would starve to death. When the wagon came to a halt, Ping heard footsteps approach. Kai, she said, it's time to shape change. The little dragon wrapped his tail around her arm and changed into a soup ladle. The leather flap was thrown back. Ping blinked and shaded her eyes. Her eyes grew accustomed to the light, and she saw that they were not in a village, but in a courtyard with high walls on all sides. Large wooden gates were closing behind them. The gate was decorated with paintings of red bats and blue cranes, the symbols of good luck and long life. Her captors were talking to the guards at the gate, pointing at her. "We caught the dragon sorceress," one of them boasted. "She tried to cast spells on us. Did you hear what happened to our captain?" The wagon started to move again. This time, the guards didn't retie the leather flap. They passed under another gateway. This one had three large characters painted on it in gold. The wagon made its way across a many-arched, curved bridge which crossed a wide lake. A steep, rocky island rose up out of the water. On top of the island was a pavilion. On the opposite shore of the lake, willow trees bent sadly, their boughs dipping into the water, falling leaves drifting down like tears. This wasn't the wild beauty of nature like on Taishan. Every tree, flower, and rock had been carefully placed. It was a huge garden. On the other side of the lake, the narrow road started to rise. The garden spread up the slopes of a small hill. The wagon passed a cluster of maple trees, their leaves just starting to turn red. Ping had seen these trees before. The road meandered between flower beds to a beautiful building halfway up the hill. Ping knew where she was. It was Ming Yang, the Imperial Hunting Lodge, where she had met the Emperor. When the wagon reached Ming Yang Lodge, a nervous guard untied Ping's hands and feet. The others pointed their spears at her as she stiffly climbed down. She stared up at Ming Yang Lodge. It looked different. The roofs were no longer black. Gleaming yellow tiles had replaced the gloomy black ones. The Emperor had gone ahead with his plan to change the imperial color. Ping smiled, even though there were spear tips sticking in her back. She had suggested that Liu Che change the imperial color from black to yellow. The lodge seemed quiet. Two serving women hurried by, glancing fearfully at Ping, but there wasn't the bustle of servants and ministers that there had been the last time Ping was there. The smell of cooking wafted from the direction of the kitchens. She could smell garlic, ginger, and plum sauce. Her stomach rumbled. They were the fragrant aromas of an imperial banquet. Her heart thudded. It could only mean one thing. The Emperor was at Ming Yang Lodge. She had thought she would have weeks to work out what she would say to Liu Che, how she would plead for her life. Now she had no time at all to think about it. Ping felt a strange mixture of excitement and dread at the thought of seeing Liu Che again. In the brief time she had spent at Ming Yang before, she had enjoyed his company very much. Besides being the Emperor, he was also the only person she'd ever known who was close to her own age. The only boy. There had been young men working at Huangling Palace from time to time, sour-faced, scowling stable hands and gardeners, but they had all avoided her as if she was an ugly spider. The handsome young Emperor, despite his exalted position, had smiled at her and treated her with respect. He had taken notice of what she had to say, even though she was just a slave girl. She longed to renew her friendship with him, but she knew that would not happen. She had seen the look on Liu Che's face as she had flown away with Danza. The guards didn't take Ping before the Emperor, or to the pretty chamber where she had slept on her previous visit to Ming Yang Lodge. Instead, they led her to a new building some distance from the lodge, hastily constructed of bamboo canes, roughly thatched with untidy bundles of twigs. Ping could hear strange sounds coming from it. Animal sounds, growls and screeches. Inside were bamboo cages. One contained a large black cat as big as a tiger. Another contained two sad-eyed monkeys. The guards kept away from the cage containing the black cat. One of them touched a deep scratch on his arm. "I'll be glad when it's released into the tiger forest," he muttered. Ping remembered how Liu Che had decided to turn the tiger forest that lay beyond the gardens to the south into a wild animal reserve for creatures from all over the empire. "Where's my rat?" she asked. They ignored her and led her to an empty cage. The guard reached out to take the ladle from her arm. "Don't touch it!" Ping shouted, but he took no notice. As he touched the ladle, a strange expression passed over his face before he collapsed to the floor and lay like a plank of wood. The other guards opened the door of the cage and shoved her in. A pile of dirty straw and a bucket were the only furnishings. They locked the door and left her with the animals. Any hopes Ping had that the Emperor might forgive her disappeared. Ping shut her eyes as the ladle on her arm turned into a small dragon.
"Hungry," said the sad voice in her head.
A few days earlier, nothing would have made her happier than hearing Kai say another word. But now she had much more serious concerns. She had to keep them both alive. Ping sank into the straw. It smelt of horse manure. "Good boy, Kai," she said, scratching him around the bumps on his head, trying to sound pleased. "You did well today." The little dragon whimpered. Her cheerful words didn't fool him at all. Her own feelings were unimportant now. Kai was her first priority. He was thin, and his scales were dull. He lay in the straw making soft, low sounds that only made her feel worse. She would have preferred it if he'd bitten her. Sometime later, a guard came in and without a word pushed a bowl of gruel through the bars of her cage. Kai tried to eat the gruel, but it just made him sick. He wasn't able to digest meat yet. Ping ate a mouthful of the gruel, but she couldn't bring herself to eat much with the hungry dragon watching her. Ping had been imprisoned before. She had been cornered by strong enemies armed with weapons. She had always been able to think of a way to escape. But Dansa was with her then. Now she was on her own. She didn't even have Hua to help her. There seemed no way she could escape. She lay down in the straw and curled around the little dragon to comfort him. Eventually, he went to sleep. But Ping lay awake. She could only think of one way to feed Kai. She remembered the day he had hatched from the dragonstone. He had needed milk then, and there was none. Dansa had cut his chest and fed the baby with his own blood. She would have to do the same. She lay awake the whole night thinking of how she could get her hands on something sharp enough to cut her flesh. Chapter 10. The Longevity Council. Early morning light filtered through the bamboo walls. Ping had hoped that she would dream of Dansa and he would tell her what to do. But she hadn't slept at all. She remembered the old dragon's soft voice, the way his mouth sometimes looked like he was smiling, how he would point out things of interest with one of his talons.
"Hungry, hungry, hungry," said a miserable dragon voice in her mind.
Ping stroked the little dragon, ashamed that his second word only proved how much she had failed in her role as dragon keeper. She felt around for something sharp. She broke off a long splinter from one of the bamboo canes and dug it into her arm, but it only scratched her. What she needed was a blade, or a piece of broken pottery, or a thorn from a rose bush. She wished the guards hadn't taken her bag and her knife. Then Ping realized she had the thing she needed at hand. The very same tool that Dansa had used to cut his flesh. A dragon's talon. She sat Kai on her lap and held his left forepaw in her hand. Unlike cats, dragons didn't tuck their claws away when they weren't using them. They were always out, as Ping knew only too well. Kai's talons were small, but very sharp. They had often made her bleed. Ping examined the inside of her arm. Just beneath her skin, she could see the blue lines of the vessels that transported blood around her body. She chose the largest one, in the crook of her elbow, and placed the talon against the tender skin. She dug the talon deep into her arm, clamping her teeth together so that she didn't cry out. Blood ran from the wound, and she caught it in her cupped hand. "Here, Kai," she said. "Drink this." The little dragon blinked at her uncertainly. "It's okay. It doesn't hurt," she lied. "It will make you strong." He lapped at the pool of blood, cautiously at first, but then faster. He drank until the wound started to congeal. There was nothing Ping could use to bandage the cut. She felt dizzy. She lay down in the straw and slept. Ping woke when the outer door was thrown open. It was full daylight. She just had time to hide Kai under her gown before an imperial guard came and stood in front of her cage. Her eyes focused on misshapen toes bulging through holes in a pair of shabby slippers.
"Aha!" said a cheerful voice.
She looked up. It wasn't a guard at all, but a fat man wearing the gown and ribbons of an imperial minister. He was out of breath.
"So," he said, "this is the terrifying sorceress I've been hearing so much about."
Ping tried to stand up, but the cage started to spin, so she settled, forgetting to her knees. The man was nothing like the slim, stern-faced government ministers she had seen before. He had a big smile on his face and bright, twinkling eyes beneath eyebrows that reminded Ping of Kai's favorite tufty caterpillars. His ears were the longest she'd ever seen. His beard was tangled, and he had a mouth that couldn't help smiling, even when he was trying hard to be serious.
"I am Dung Fang Swa," he said, "the Imperial Magician."
"A magician?" Ping said. Dung Fang Swa chuckled to himself as if he had just remembered something very funny.
"Not the sort of magician who turns people into toads," he laughed. "I am a scientist." "We have met before."
Ping looked at the jolly old man. His ministerial cap was askew. His gown was creased, except where it was stretched tight over his large, round belly. His ribbons of office were twisted in a knot. She didn't recognize him at all.
"I was among the scientists, summoned by the Emperor that memorable day when you escaped with the Imperial Dragon."
Dung Fang Swa laughed.
"I don't remember you," said Ping. "My position was much humbler then. His Imperial Majesty has since honored me with a higher position."
He sucked air into his chest and stood a little straighter.
"I am now His Imperial Majesty's Privy Councillor, Imperial Magician, and Head of the Longevity Council."
Ping tried to look impressed, though she had no idea what the Longevity Council was. Dung Fang Swa looked at Ping.
"I remember you," he chuckled. "And your dragon. You must tell me about your adventures. When we have time."
He waved one of the guards over to unlock the cage door. Ping stood up. She was relieved to see a soup ladle lying in the straw, and not a small purple dragon.
"Where is my rat?" Ping asked.
The Imperial Magician's smile narrowed slightly.
"It's being held elsewhere."
"You're not going to hurt him, are you?" Dung Fang Swa ignored her question.
"Your presence is awaited in the Chamber of Spreading Clouds."
Ping got to her feet, steadying herself on the bars of the cage.
"You look a little pale," Dung Fang Swa said cheerfully.
"We've been shut in a wagon for 3 days, then thrown into prison," Ping replied.
"We?"
asked the Imperial Magician.
I mean I, Ping stammered.
I can't think straight. I need some fresh air.
It wasn't the first time Ping had been inside the chamber of spreading clouds. The silk wall hangings, the dragons painted on the ceiling rafters, the carved shutters were just as beautiful as she remembered. Dung Fang Sua led Ping to the center of the room. Imperial guards were positioned all around the chamber. Every guard had his eyes fixed on her and a spear pointed in her direction. The captain of the guards stepped forward and pushed her to her knees. He was the one who had fallen into a swoon on Tai Shan. In spite of the rough way he treated her, Ping was glad to see he had recovered. Ping's heart was beating faster than usual. She took some deep breaths to control it. She waited for the emperor to appear, but he didn't. Instead, four ministers entered the room and formed a circle around her, examining her just as they might have examined the black cat or the monkeys. They wore the winged headdresses of imperial ministers. But in every other respect, they were nothing like any government ministers she had seen before. One had a beard divided into five plaits, with dead flowers woven through them. Another was very small, no higher than Ping's waist, with a tiger's tail tied around his waist. The third was barefoot, and his hair hung past his shoulders in matted clumps, as if he had never combed it. The last one carried a carved staff and appeared to be blind. The ministers began questioning her. "Where did the dragon go?" asked the tiny minister. "Do you expect him to return?" "He flew away to a place where people like you can't bother him," Ping replied, "and I don't think he has the strength to return." "After he was wounded, did you keep any of the dragon's blood?" inquired the blind minister.
"No." "What gives you magic powers?" asked the barefoot one.
"Why did the guards become entranced?" asked the one with the flowers in his beard.
"I don't have any magic powers. I'm not a sorceress," she said truthfully, "and I don't know why the guards fainted," she added, less truthfully. They whispered to each other and then left the chamber.
"Who are those men?" Ping asked Dung Fang Sua.
"They are the other members of the Longevity Council," the Imperial Magician replied. "His Imperial Majesty has given the Council the task of discovering a way to make him live an exceptionally long life, so that the Empire can benefit from his rule for many generations." The last time I was in the Chamber of Spreading Clouds, the Emperor had gathered scientists and alchemists together to make an elixir that would keep him young forever, Ping said. Didn't they succeed? It had seemed to Ping like the whim of a spoilt boy at the time. "They concluded that such an elixir was impossible. The Emperor sent them away and formed the Longevity Council." Dung Fang Sua told the guards to take her back to the prison. On the way back to the animal cages, they passed by the gardener's sheds. There were heaps of leaves and dead plants that would be spread on the garden beds when they had rotted down. Ping pretended to stumble over a rake and fell to her knees. She scrabbled among the pile of leaves. The guards jabbed her with their spears, but she ignored them, collecting the worms that she found among the rotting plants. "Get up!" one of the guards shouted.
Ping stuffed the worms into her pouch and got to her feet again. The guards were whispering about her, debating whether she was going to eat the worms or use them in a spell. They hurried her back to her cage. Among the sounds of the garden, the birds, the hum of insects, the rustle of leaves, Ping could hear another faint sound. She stopped to listen. It sounded like someone crying. The guards jabbed her with their spears. She waited until the guards had locked the cage door and taken up their post outside. Then she pulled the worms from her pouch. "I have something for you, Kai," she said. The little dragon ate the worms hungrily. She reopened the wound on her arm and gave him another drink of her blood, wondering how many more times she could do so without risking her life. She felt herself drifting off to sleep when two unsmiling guards came to the cage door. "Dung Fang Suo says you're allowed to walk in the garden," one of them said. He had a short beard and squinty eyes. The other guard was younger and was unsuccessfully trying to grow a moustache. He glared at Ping. He clearly didn't approve of the prisoner having such freedom. 2 seasons had passed since Ping had walked in the gardens of Ming Yang Lodge. It had been in the full bloom of spring then. Now autumn was colouring the leaves of the trees. The fan-shaped leaves of the ginkgo trees were turning yellow. A few fallen leaves swirled around her feet in a gentle breeze. Maples, ashes, and other trees whose names Ping didn't know were turning orange and red. Dogwood trees and holly bushes bore red berries. The tiny white flowers of the sweet olive tree filled the air with fragrance. A grove of cypress trees stood apart from all this autumn colour, dark and green as ever. Ping knelt down to take a closer look at the wilting chrysanthemums, though she was really more interested in the fruit that had fallen from a crabapple tree. She picked through the bruised fruit and found snails and slugs. "I'd like to visit the Garden of Secluded Harmony," she said to the guards as she stood up. They looked at each other. "Oh, I'm not sure about that," said the bearded guard. "Did Minister Dung say I couldn't go there?" She could see him going through his orders in his head. "Not exactly. I just want to admire the view," Ping said. The guards both gripped their spears firmly. "Just remember, we're watching you," said the guard with the unsuccessful moustache. Ping followed the path up the hill as it curved between strangely shaped rocks that twisted and contorted as if they were in pain. She knew each rock had been carefully chosen for its resemblance to a lion or a dragon, and placed in the garden to be admired, like statues. The Garden of Secluded Harmony was at the top of the hill. As she approached, Ping knew it had changed before she reached it. A tower soared up from the top of the hill. "What's that?" Ping asked. "It's called the Touching Heaven Tower," one of the guards replied. "The Emperor ordered it to be constructed. Stonemasons have only just finished building it." Ping walked faster up the path. She could hear faint music, clear, ringing notes that grew louder as she climbed. At last, the hill flattened out and the Garden of Secluded Harmony was spread before her. She remembered the morning she had walked around it with the Emperor, crossing the precious jade lake on the zigzag bridge, peering into the lake's depths, looking for turtles, sitting in the watching magnolia buds open pavilion. Ping remembered the exact spot where the Emperor had insisted she call him by his personal name. A wave of sadness wiped away her happy memories, like an ocean wave washing footprints from a beach. dancer, had been with them that day. There were no daffodils now, no magnolia flowers, no cherry blossoms. Autumn flowers were in bloom, anemones, daylilies, windflowers. But even if the daffodils and magnolias had been in flower, they wouldn't have held her attention. The last time she had been in the Garden of Secluded Harmony, there had been a small pavilion halfway across the zigzag bridge. The pavilion had disappeared, and in its place stood the tower. In the imperial capital of Chang'an, the gate towers were 4 stories high. This tower was more than twice that height. It was built of large blocks of stone that were alternately painted red and white, like a board for playing checkers. The cornerstones were painted with swirling cloud patterns. A wooden pavilion with carved eaves and balconies was perched on top of the stone tower. How anyone could climb up to reach it, Ping had no idea. A yellow-tiled roof, like a miniature version of the lodge roofs, topped the structure. Bells hung from the edges of the balconies, under the eaves, and from the corners of the roof. They were the source of the music she had heard. The lower bells were large and made a deep ringing sound. The bells under the eaves were smaller and had a higher chime. Those hanging from the corners of the roof were smaller still and made just a faint tinkle. Each breath of wind created a different melody, pretty but sad. On the top of the tower, a statue of an immortal glittered in the sunlight.
"Is that gold?" asked Ping.
"Yes," said the guard in a hushed voice. "Solid gold." Ping shaded her eyes so that she could see the details in the sunlight. The immortal's hands were raised above his head. In them, he held a green jade dish.
"But why did the emperor build this tower?"
"To catch the pure dew of heaven that drips from the stars," the bearded guard replied, proud of his knowledge. Not to be outdone, the other guard continued. "The Longevity Council believes that if the emperor drinks star dew every day, he will live for 1,000 years.
"Is it your job to collect the dew?" Ping asked.
The guards looked horrified. "No, not us," exclaimed the guard with the failing moustache. "Spilling even a drop is punishable by death. That's a shaman's job." Ping gazed up at the tower. She wondered how the shaman could climb up it to get the dew without risking plunging to his death. But she didn't ask the guards. Now she had them at their ease. She had another question, one she'd been wanting to ask ever since she'd arrived.
"Is the emperor at Mingyang Lodge?"
"No," they replied together. "His Imperial Majesty is in Chang'an." Ping didn't know whether to be disappointed or relieved. As she walked back from the Gardens of Secluded Harmony, Ping saw a plant whose leaves she knew would heal her wounded arm. It grew along a path that led to a dense ring of bamboo plants. The bamboo canes were 3 times Ping's height and grew so close together that it was impossible to find a way through them. She could hear a soft sound coming from behind the bamboo. It sounded like the crying she had heard before. Ping found a place where the bamboo canes were not quite as dense. Pretending to be interested in the healing plant, she peered through. She could see a small square pavilion that was walled in on all but one side. Ping could just make out a dim figure inside. It was a woman. Her head was bent low. She was sobbing softly. It was the sound of someone who had completely given up hope of happiness. It was the saddest sound Ping had ever heard. The bamboo canes formed a living prison. It seemed that she wasn't the only prisoner at Ming Yang Lodge. The woman's hands lay palm up on the bench beside her. Small ornaments hung from her ears and trembled as she sobbed. She allowed the tears to drip from her face. There were so many tears, her pale blue silk gown must have been soaked. From her fine clothing, she looked like a woman of position and wealth. How could someone so privileged be so unhappy? The guards realized what Ping was doing. "You shouldn't be spying on the princess," one of them hissed, prodding her until she went back to the path. As they led her away, Ping looked back at the weeping woman with new curiosity. The guards suddenly froze in their tracks, looks of terror on their faces. "What is the prisoner doing wandering around the gardens?" said a voice. Both guards fell to their knees and bowed their heads to the ground. Ping knew who it was without having to turn her head. It was Liu Che, the Emperor. Chapter 11. The Princess Who Couldn't Smile. Liu Che was standing with his hands clasped behind his back. He wasn't wearing the yellow ceremonial gown that he had worn the last time Ping had seen him, but a dark blue satin one, embroidered with gold. Over the gown, he wore a fur-trimmed, sleeveless coat. He looked weary. Three government ministers, several servants, and a number of imperial guards were hurrying along the path. As usual, they were having trouble keeping up with him. The emperor's expression was grim, just as it had been when Ping first met him. Despite this, she felt a bubble of hope form inside her. Surely he would understand that she'd only done what she thought was right. She sank to her knees and lowered her head till her forehead touched the stone path. "It's good to see you again, Your Imperial Majesty," Ping said.
"Don't speak to His Imperial Majesty," one of the guards said, kicking her.
"I will permit the prisoner to answer my questions," the emperor said. Ping saw his feet move towards her. "You allowed my dragon to escape," he said bluntly. It wasn't actually a question, but Ping replied anyway.
"Yes, Your Imperial Majesty. I felt it was my only choice. Dancer was wounded. He wouldn't have lived long in captivity."
"You deserted your imperial post."
"Yes."
She lifted her head so that she could see him. The guards started to move towards her, but the emperor raised his hand to stop them. Liu Che had changed. He was no longer a boy, but a young man. He had grown several inches. His hair was pulled into a tight knot on the back of his head, and he wore a flat, square headdress with black beads hanging from the corners. Ping was suddenly aware of her crumpled gown, her untidy hair, her dirty fingernails. She wished she looked better. The emperor didn't return her gaze. He watched a snail crawl out of her pouch. There was a look of anger and distaste on his face, but Ping was so happy to see him, she couldn't stop her mouth from smiling. Her thoughts formed into words and escaped from her mouth.